Welcome to the Empathic Mastery Show. I'm your host, Jennifer Moore, and I'm so glad you're here. This is a place where we talk about what it means to be highly sensitive and empathic, how this impacts all aspects of our lives, and we explore tools, resources, and solutions so we can shift from absorbing all the thoughts, feelings, and energy of the world around us to being beacons for calm, love, and healing.
Hey there, everybody. I'm back with another episode of the Empathic Mastery Show. And today I have a lovely, lovely guest with me, Whitney Ann Jenkins. Whitney Ann Jenkins is a mindful and reflective creative, an actress, musician, voiceover artist, and writer, and the co-founder of the Wild Inner Child Collective. As host and creator of the podcast, Unconditioning, Discovering the Voice Within, which I had the privilege of being on, she hosts space for conversations that explore the conscious awareness of the inner authentic voice and is an advocate for the power of storytelling and its ability to connect us globally and universally, believing that every human on the planet has an interesting story of value. Whitney Ann is a certified energy healer and Reiki master, volunteer crisis counselor, and integrative wellness coach pursuing her PhD in humanistic psychology with a focus specifically on the boundaries and mental wellness of performing artists, with a specific interest in the intersection of creativity and sexuality. Welcome, Whitney Ann. I'm so glad you're here.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And just reading your bio, I'm like, there are so many different directions that we could take this. I mean, I was saying, like, I really want to hear all about the Wild Inner Child Collective, but then also, like, you know, boundaries, mental health, for and the intersection of creativity and sexuality for, you know, around performance and just all of this, like, so many juicy areas. But before we go off into all of that, I always love to start with the beginning. You as a younger person, or at what point did your intuition, did your awareness of your own sensitivity start? Like, where did you begin?
Wow. So I was really, really quiet as a child, and everyone thought that I was really shy. And I think, rather than being shy, now that I look back on it, I was sort of protecting myself from all of the energies around me because I was absorbing so many of them and I didn't really know what to do with them.
Yeah.
And I think from a really, really young age, like probably, you know, 2, 3, 4, kind of learning that it was easier for me to just keep to myself rather than engage with others because I was going to be taking on that energy. And I didn't have any awareness of boundaries or how I could protect myself at that age. And still, I'm kind of trying to figure that one out.
I think a lot of us are.
Yeah. But also, when I was younger, I remember going out into my backyard and acting out films that I had watched and trying to kind of like dissect the emotions and the pain that was portrayed in the film because I really connected with it and I was trying to figure out why. And so that was kind of like my first connection to acting and psychology and the trajectory that I'm currently on, which took a while to put those pieces together. But
yeah,
and looking back on it, it totally makes sense now.
Absolutely. Well, and I was, as you were speaking, I was going to ask you, I was thinking, like, what an interesting thing to have been a very quiet, very appearingly shy child, and that the way that you were navigating you being so sensitive and absorbing the energy from the world was to just really kind of keep to yourself. And I was like, wow, how did you go from being really, really quiet to becoming a performer and a, you know, an actress and a musician? And then you started to answer that question. But I'm wondering, when did you make the transition, or how did you make the transition from acting in your backyard, probably to like maybe your dog was your audience or something. But how did you go from acting in your backyard to actually being like, I want to do this in front of other people? I want to do this with an audience.
So I think there was a moment that happened when I was in a dance class, actually. So I was taking dance classes and piano lessons and very like involved in like taking lessons for like artistic purposes that my mom and my dad would wanted me to do. I think they had this kind of like inkling that it might help me to be less quiet and get me out of my shell. But I was in a dance class one day and they had like this, I think I was around 7 or 8, and they had this girl come in and she came and like she was singing a song that they were just putting this element into the dance recital, and she sang this song and like something kind of like clicked within me and I was like, I can do that. Like that's something that I want to do. I like want to belt out a song like that. And so I went home and I started singing all of the time. And that felt like it was such a connected kind of thing to some kind of like thing greater than me. It felt like it was my own space that I could protect myself in a way. Mm. And once I started singing though, like my parents caught wind of it and they were like, oh, like we should like, you know, put her in voice lessons and voice classes. And so it was really interesting because something that I felt was like really like my own became something that other people were trying to kind of manipulate to their own liking and purpose. So the singing thing kind of like transitioned into doing musicals. And then I started taking acting classes as a kid. But it's interesting because when I was taking acting classes as a kid, a lot of it was rooted in improvisation, and I didn't like that at all. Mm. And I think it was just because of like the chaotic energy of everyone around me in that. And I found great comfort in hiding behind a script. Like I was able to like really connect with the words and having something to say and connecting with like that emotion, something specific, rather than being an absorbent sponge of all of the things coming at me all at once.
That makes so much sense to me. And I was thinking as you were saying it, I was like, improv requires being very open, energetically, telepathically, empathically open. Whereas following a script, it's like, there's a certain amount of like, you are projecting. Whereas with improv, I think you are receiving or, you know, and taking, absorbing. And and I was thinking even with like you, like going from just being really quiet, but going to singing all the time before everybody else co-opted it on you, that it's like, if you are broadcasting out, you're not going to be absorbing as much in. And so it seems to me, and it makes a lot of sense to me though, that it was much more comfortable once you got into theater, that you were in, that a script was a much more comfortable place to be than the improv was.
Yeah. And I've actually never made that connection until like this moment of those things, but having a script like isn't like rigid or anything.
No,
it provides the boundaries to be able to like give and receive in a safer way, I guess.
So, yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because you're not, I mean, with a script, there's a set of rules. There's parameters that you're working with, and you're not having to constantly be paying attention to the cues of that other person in the same way that you do with improv. So that makes complete sense to me, that why one would be comfortable and the other wouldn't. Yeah. And yet you persisted.
I did. Yeah. I did persist. So I ended up going to, like, all throughout high school, I performed high school, like actually going to classes was something that I had to do. And like going to rehearsal afterwards was like what I lived for. Because I was, you know, able to like be in my own protective element and still have fun and play, because I was able to create sort of like that playground for myself of safety within that environment. And then I ended up going to college for theater. And that was also very interesting because my college that I went to was very improv based heavy. Like, so the department chair of my college was Sheldon Patinkin, who was one of the founders of Second City. And so we had a Second City program at my college, and I was required to take improv classes, and I was put back in this like fearful, like not sure what to do. It was almost like a freeze that would happen to me.
Yeah.
So I had to like work my way through that. And I had to actually take that class twice.
Oh my goodness.
And for most people, that was like the easiest class that they could ever do, because you don't have to prepare for it. You just show up and you do your thing. But that was really challenging for me.
I'm just nodding my head as you're speaking, because I've never really thought about, I did a little bit of improv acting classes and things like that when I was younger. And there's definitely such an incredible difference between working with a context versus working completely off the cuff, where you're just like, you know, it's at the, you're completely at the mercy of what another person is deciding to do. So as you're speaking, I'm really struck by the fact that like something compelled you to keep going. Like there are so many points, you know, for somebody where it started as something that like singing was something, you know, dancing. I mean, your parents kind of put you in dance class to kind of draw you out of your shell and to kind of help you to just like to socialize you, you know. And then as you started to sing, that became yours. Like you found your way with that and everything. But then even with that, it sounds like there was just these ways that like something that was inherently yours, like even as a small child being out in the backyard and performing in the backyard and experimenting with things, that was yours. And then your parents are like, okay, we're going to take this thing and we're going to send you somewhere. Mm-hmm. It's like, I'm hearing this theme of like, it's the seed in you that is born, and then somebody sees it and is like, let's nurture this, but they don't necessarily nurture it in the way that nurtures you. What I'm struck by is the fact that you somehow, like something kept you going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that is kind of the whole basis of this Wild Inner Child project that we can get to later. The thing inside of you that keeps you going, the diamond, yeah. in some contexts or philosophies, use that word, this urge or desire that you have within you that you must attend to.
Yeah.
Because yeah. if you don't, it will destroy you. So you right. either pay attention to it or you don't.
So with that state or that comment about, you know, it's like, if you don't pay attention, basically, if you don't give it its due, it will destroy you. So did you try to walk away from the creativity? Did you like, did you kind of be like, this is not mine, this is not for me? Like how did...
Yeah, so I'm trying to like figure out how to jump the timeline a little bit, because there was a point.
It's all good. Jump the timeline.
Yeah. So years went by, and like I graduated college and I went to LA and I did some performing, and then lots of things happened in between. But I got to a point where like I was trying to like please people, because I'm a people pleaser too. And that is probably a part of like an empathic kind of thing too.
Seems to be pretty common.
and so I was like, okay, like I have to get a regular job that has benefits, because that's what society tells me that I should do. And so I was working at this job in a factory, and I was performing full time. And one day I was at the factory at work, and my hand started going numb, and I was like, this isn't right. And so they kind of sent me home, and I went home and I was changing clothes and I fell over. Like I just like collapsed. And so I went to the doctor and they were like, you need to go to the ER. And so I went to the ER and they ran a bunch of tests and they ended up admitting me into the hospital. And they, you know, they took blood like every 2 hours, like MRIs, brain scans, CAT scans, spinal taps, like they couldn't figure out what was wrong with me. And I was so weak that I couldn't walk. And I ended up like staying in the hospital for like 7 days.
Wow.
With like no answers of really like what was going on. And I think like looking back on it, I was not being authentic to myself. And so I was trying to like play this role for other people when it was not in alignment with me. So yeah.
I was also thinking it's like the reason you had this job was because you believed that you needed to have health insurance. And I'm kind of like, and so the universe is like, oh, you believe you need to have health insurance. Let's give you, you know, like let's give you a reason why you need it. Sort of that I don't know if that old sort of that old trope of like a parent, I'll give you something to cry about.
Right. Yeah. Well, the crazy thing is at that point it was just a temp job. And so like I had that experience and I didn't even really have good insurance. So, So I was silly and I was like, I stayed in that job because they hired me on full time. So I would have health insurance. And so it was a terrible spiral downward. But actually that experience is really interesting because it was such a mindless job. And I was felt like I was able to kind of like tap into like a meditative state during that time because it was so repetitive. And I would like, I wrote songs in my head and I would just repeat it over and over and over. And at the end of like the workday, I would like take it back to my band and be like, hey, like I wrote a song. And I could memorize lines while I was sitting there, but also I didn't have the words for it at the time, but I felt like my crown chakra kind of like explode open and like connects to something. And I didn't know what was happening to me, but that was definitely a time where I felt like I was tapping into something.
Yeah. Yeah. And so did the health condition or the weird health thing just sort of like subside as sort of abruptly or as kind of unexpectedly as it showed up? Or was there a recovery journey for you?
It kind of faded away. I think I was in a state of depression for quite a while. And I ended up doing a play and the character was she was kind of suicidal of the character that I had. She had a lot of like depression issues that are talked about within the text of the show. And I think that theater saved my life in that moment because I was able to focus my energies in that character in a protective way. I was able to express like publicly what I was feeling.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So one of the things I'm hearing as a theme kind of running through this is the idea of art as your way of, or as a way of processing and making sense of emotions. And that, you know, even from, as you were saying, as a very little girl, that you would watch these movies with intense feelings and you would dissect them. You would think them through. You would try to act them out and understand what they were about. And then as you're saying again, at this point in time, you're going through a period in your life that is, you're going against your heart. You're going against what you, your diamond, your spark, but you're also young and believe that you need health insurance and believe. Yeah. And I mean, there's benefit to health insurance. I'm not one of those people who, when I was one of the very first New Age trainings I ever took, they actually were like, you don't need health insurance. If you believe in health insurance, you're going to actually like, they were like, like it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. And I'm kind of like, you know what? Sometimes there's a benefit of having health insurance. Sometimes you just fall and you break a leg and it helps to have something to pay for, you know, setting the bone. But, you know, I'm just sort of hearing between the people pleasing, the social conditioning, and just being young, that you were just really going through this hard time. And again, it was this opportunity to sort of, it almost sounds like acting is a way to remove yourself from, like, it's a way to take the inner and put it outside of yourself so that you can examine it or and explore it. Does that ring true?
Yeah, I would think so. I think that's an accurate explanation. Yeah.
So, okay. So you're doing this piece and you have this opportunity to articulate and to express the depression and the struggles that you're going through in a safe way. What happens next? Did you quit your job? Did you stay with the job? Like what, how, where did you go from there?
So while I was at that job, I had a lot of time to think. And at a factory job, no offense to people who like do have like a job like that, because if you're content in that, that's completely fine. But like, it wasn't very intellectually stimulating for me. So I got this, I've always been like really into psychology, like even from a young age. I might not have called it that, but that was what it was. And so I got this thought that I really wanted to go back to school and study psychology. And I wanted to focus on performers specifically. And so I kind of like put that out into the universe. And I did end up quitting the job. And I tried to like leave on like medical leave for like depression, but it was really hard to like get them to accept that.
Yeah.
And then I took this awful job, like selling life insurance because like someone who worked there left and like started doing that job. And I was like, just anything to get out of here is going to be okay with me. And so I did that for a couple of months and it was really okay. So talk about being an empath and protecting yourself. It was a door to door, like life insurance sales job. And it was for union workers. And so like
in Los Angeles or in Southern California?
So this was in Pennsylvania, in Pittsburgh, actually.
Okay, Pittsburgh. Wow.
And so like I would go door to door to sell life insurance to like these men who were like coal miners or, you know, in construction workers or in the union.
Yeah.
And so I really, really had to learn to protect myself in that situation. And so events kind of like transpired and I was contacted by a person that I encountered at a cast party one time. And at this point I had like formed a band and I had recorded an album and they reached out to me because they were like, hey, like we can help you market your music and get some exposure. And I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. So sure, why not? So I set up a meeting with the creative director and they were based in Boston. And like I had the meeting set up like three times and it got canceled like every time. And I was like, okay, like this is not, it's just not going to work out. And I'm just going to have to move on and let it go. But the next time it actually like did work out and I met with the creative director and he was like, yeah, we're based in Boston. And like there were musicians who went to Berkeley and they had this software that he had developed that combined AI with like psychological concepts and like how to like attract a genuine audience and advocate for artists. And I was like, okay, like psychology, art, like this is exactly what I was like kind of like thinking about. So I'm going to like hop on this train. So I worked with them on my own music marketing stuff for a little bit, but I ended up begging for a job. Mm-hmm. Because I was like, if I can sell life insurance to these old guys that like are scary and I don't really like want to be around, I can definitely sell something that I actually like really believe in.
Yeah.
But at that time I didn't realize that like there were only two people like working at the company. And so like I like was the third one. So I ended up like working with them and going to Boston and like building this company. And we worked out of a hotel lobby because they had free Wi-Fi. And we ended up...
What hotel? I'm originally from Boston.
It was in Back Bay, I think.
Uh-huh.
I forget which one. The Hilton was one of them, but there was another schwankier one that we moved to eventually.
Did you ever do the Boston Harbor Hotel?
I don't think so.
Yeah, that is like one of the most... That is a swanky hotel in Boston. Yeah.
Anyway, so we ended up growing, and a lot of our clientele... We're in LA. And so we ended up moving to LA. That was the second time that I lived there. And I wasn't planning to go back, but there I was. And so we helped artists and connected like psychological concepts to what we were coaching them on. And we grew and had a 40,000 square foot office eventually.
Wow.
And... That was a really crazy time. And like the CEO of the company, like they were all really into like meditation and consciousness. And it was just kind of like something that was inserted into the environment of being around there. And I learned a lot during that time. And I don't think we have time to go into like everything that I experienced there because it was a lot.
We can just say you learned a lot.
So I left that job and then I went to that other job. And so like the whole thing about that job was it was fun and it was, you know, remote and for the most part, and like I had freedom and I could create my own schedule. And then somehow like it suddenly morphed into this thing where we had a team of executives and it was like Monday through Friday, like 9 to 5. And I was like, okay, so like I manifested this thing and helped build it. And now I'm like trapping myself into what I was trying to get out of. So that was really interesting. And anyway, the company went through some transitions and I also transitioned out of that because it was no longer like within my wheelhouse or anything that I was interested in. And I ended up doing a lot of voiceover work with audiobooks during that time. And it was interesting with that because that was during COVID time. And so I was able to work from home and kind of survive doing that. And I would do like nonfiction books, but I got a lot of fiction books. And every single one of the books that I was assigned, because I was working for a company in London and I was on their roster and they would just assign books to me. And I found that every book that came to me, there was like a message in it that I needed to hear.
Yeah.
So then I moved from California during the COVID time back to Pennsylvania and West Virginia because my grandma like was really sick and they needed someone to go and take care of her. And I was like, I will do that because I don't need to be here paying extraordinary amounts of rent to like work from home. And so I drove across country and I got there on Christmas Eve and I was with my grandmother for 5 days before she died.
Wow.
And those 5 days were really wild because I feel like she kind of knew like she was on the way out because she was like seeing things in the kitchen and explaining like that she was hearing a little girl sing and she was really in tune with something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, I had to like figure out my life because I was planning to like be there in the woods in West Virginia at her house, taking care of her for a little while, but I kind of got thrust into making other decisions. So I decided to go back to school for psychology and get my master's and then eventually my PhD. And it was an interesting long journey of leaving that factory job to going to Boston, to California, and following that drive thing that we were talking about.
Yeah. Well, and just, it's so interesting how there's these threads that keep on kind of weaving through your journey and where it's almost like the universe conspires to get you to where you're supposed to be in this whole thing. I can only imagine, I'm sort of imagining like, I mean, that must have been quite a surprise to get to your grandmother's and for her to die 5 days later, because like you said, you were sort of expecting that you were going to be able to land for a little while and just kind of, but the universe was kind of like, yeah, no, we've got other plans for you.
No. Actually, like around the time that I was working the factory job too, I was in a car accident. And I don't remember much about it, but I totaled my car. And the only thing that I remember is someone kind of like being like, you know, like, wake up, get up, like, you're not done yet. But there, I did, and there was no one there. And I was able to drive the car like all the way back to where I was living, and no one stopped me along the way.
Wow. In a totaled car.
Yeah. And no one stopped me. So, yeah.
I'm curious, do you recall if the accident happened before you ended up in the hospital or after you ended up in the hospital?
I think it was after.
Wow.
I think it was like, pay attention.
Yeah, you were getting some serious wake-up calls.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're not done yet. So, I don't know.
Not done yet. Well, but also you were speaking about how if we don't honor that, you know, that wild inner child, if we don't honor the diamond within us, that it will kill us. And it really sounds like you were kind of up against it at that point in your life. So I'm hearing part of this is the theme of the journey to giving ourselves permission to honor our truth and to honor that path of alignment.
Yeah. And yeah, the authenticity piece, which I think that's, I mean, my podcast is about following the inner voice, and I don't think that's for like no reason. So, no.
Right.
Yeah. I think finding a way to be authentic, and I feel like other people are much better at doing that sometimes than I seem to have been in my path. But
I guess what it comes to my mind is whenever I hear any of us start to say so-and-so is doing this better, I'm always curious about how our definition of something is affecting the way we perceive ourselves doing it. Because I'm like, what does it mean to be authentic? Like, if being authentic is that you are by your nature somebody who works better within a pattern, within a blueprint, within a framework, and is somebody who doesn't necessarily love spontaneity, then is the definition of authenticity that you're comparing yourself to, is that really the authentic you?
That's a great question. I don't know.
Yeah. I have a feeling it's not. And I'm sort of thinking, I'm wondering if, like, I don't know about you, but when I think about like our cultural idea of authenticity, I think that there's a way that our cultural, that there's a lot of like spontaneous, it's sometimes blunt to the point of just like, or to the point of TMI, or like honest, self-revealing, self-exposing,
I think
the kind of creative, like, I don't know, like just sort of that idea of like, that person is so authentic. They're really themselves.
So yeah, I think authenticity to me is something much more internal. I think it's like kind of like the barometer of whether you're following something that you feel like you should be following or if you're connected to it or in alignment with it, or if it resonates with you, because you're connected with like your heart, really. Your heart is your compass in a lot of ways, in my opinion. And if you're disconnected with that, when I'm disconnected from that, it takes me all sorts of weird ways.
Yeah. So then from that, I'm going to extrapolate that when you're saying that you may not be as good at being authentic as some other people are, it's more about the fact that there are times where you hit detours, you hit roadblocks where you're just like, oh, great. I just, yeah.
And they don't seem to be very subtle sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah. I can relate. I've definitely. Well, and I don't know about, well, and even the story that you were talking about, like where you started in this company that's like doing this amazing fusion of like marketing and psychology and AI and supporting artists. And you're like, I love this. This is right for me. This is aligned for me. And you outgrow it. It outgrows you. Like it grows in different directions. But it sounds like it was very aligned with your authentic self to begin with. And then it sort of took this wild turn. And I'm kind of imagining, knowing just the stories that I've been through and I've witnessed so many other people, there's that point where you recognize that things are changing and it is no longer in alignment with you. But then there's the period of the awkward in between stage where you kind of wait. Or you don't give yourself permission to just jettison because of all of the social ideas of like, you know, I don't know what your voices are, but like, don't be a quitter or like, give it another chance, be patient, be tolerant. And I think that there's like that just really painful, challenging, sometimes or awkward in between stage from that moment where you're like, this is no longer aligned for me to the, this is really no longer aligned for me when we actually make the change.
Right. And that the admittance that it's not working anymore too is a huge piece for me because I don't like giving up on anything. Like I don't like quitting. I don't like, you know, admitting that it's not something that I chose is not working anymore. That's hard for me to swallow sometimes.
Well, and I think our culture has a lot of, if it doesn't work forever, it's not, you know, then it's a sign of failure. Like,
right.
I've witnessed this with marriages and with people where I have a very dear person in my life who's been partnered with the same person for 28 years. They've been married for 24 and recently have come to a place where they're parting ways. And it's just really striking how much our culture kind of will throw an entire life under the bus if we can't sustain it forever. And it's kind of like sometimes things, as an outsider looking at it, I'm like, yeah, grew each other. It's not that you failed at this. You guys just grew in different directions and it's okay.
Yeah, I think it's especially challenging when it took a great leap of faith in order to get to that point in the first place.
Yes.
And so going through that experience, you look forward at that next leap being just like the one that you've already experienced. Yep. But in my experience, I just said experience quite a lot, but in my experience, it gets easier. Like that jump of faith and like that surrender aspect, like gets easier because you've gone through it before. You've survived like previously. So it's like the unknown isn't as scary.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. For me, the word surrender is tied into that part, that phase of life too. And there is definitely something, I don't love getting to the place of surrender. I always come to it kicking and screaming, but I will say that I'm more likely to surrender quicker now than I was when I was younger. And I also am much more likely to surrender to surrendering in a way that makes it a lot easier once I've kind of been like, okay, fine, I'm gonna surrender. I'm gonna accept this. I'm going to like let it unfold as it will. So, and it's not quite at the time where I will say, oh my goodness, Whitney Ann, I can't believe how fast the time is going by, but we are getting, but it is whizzing by. And I really did want to make sure that we had a chance to talk about the Wild Inner Child Collective, the Wild Inner Child, like just, and especially that piece of how does the Wild Inner Child tie into that access to your inner compass? How does it tie into the really making authenticity your priority?
Right. Yeah. So the Wild Inner Child Collective is a monthly kind of circle experience to explore those things and get back to the joy of the wild inner child, and not like going to a therapist and recalling all of like your terrible experiences, but connecting with that like pure, like feeling safe. Safety is like the first, like primary thing that must happen in order for you to be able to feel like creative and explore and do it to wild abandon, you know, and get back to your wild inner child. And so what we're doing is we're kind of taking the concept of archetypes and storytelling, and each month we're coming at it from a different archetype and implementing also the transcendent function, because that's a very Jungian term, but looking at the shadows within the light and vice versa, because you might like this one type of character archetype within you, but in reality, we have all of the archetypes within us, and we have to explore all of them in order to be able to come back and be connected to that wild inner child from a very like genuine, like pure space.
So I'm hearing two things. One is just the capacity to recognize and know and have space for all of the different, the light and the shadow of all of the archetypes within us, and embracing, and not just the part that we like necessarily, but really embracing and accepting the complexity of ourselves.
Yeah. Go ahead.
But the other thing I heard you saying is safety, and how imperative safety is to be able to do this kind of exploration, to be able to be in a place of creativity. And so I actually was wondering, I mean, obviously this has been a journey. In some ways, it seems like creativity, psychology, authenticity, and safety has kind of been the theme or the through line in your life. What would you suggest are ways to start creating safety, achieving safety, finding safety?
Well, I'm still figuring that out myself. Boundaries are incredibly important. And as someone like me and people who are people pleasers, yeah, who tend to not have boundaries, I think first kind of like looking at your relationship with boundaries and seeing if you even have one.
Yeah.
And having an understanding of boundaries and why we need them, because boundaries has kind of like a negative connotation to me. Like it seems like very like rigid, and you're not going to like let anything happen, and you have to like follow the rules and blah, 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 blah. But actually, when you think about like the divine feminine and the divine masculine, of like the divine masculine, like holding that container to allow for the flow and the chaos to be in a safe place.
Yeah. Well, and I recently heard a really great clarification about boundaries that I really appreciated, which was a lot of people approach boundaries from a standpoint of rules and from the standpoint of this is what you have to do, like where somebody will basically be like, these are my boundaries and you need to respect them and you need to do this and this and this. But what I love is, instead of looking at boundaries that way, really thinking about boundaries are about how do we want to be treated? How do we want to be in the world? What will we tolerate? What will we not tolerate? What are we comfortable with? What are we not comfortable with? And then explaining to other people the consequences of a choice that is about your participation, not theirs, mm-hmm, but to basically be able to say, if you continue to do this, then this is what I will do in response to that, which is really, really different than saying, I need you to stop doing this thing. And,
right. Yeah. You
know, and mm-hmm, I think for me, like there's even just like, there's a much softer way of approaching boundaries when it's really about for me, boundaries are ultimately about honoring what is my truth, what is in alignment for me, and how will I protect that?
Yeah. And to add on to that, also your self-value and your self-worth, and do you honor yourself enough to implement them in the first place?
Do you honor yourself enough to implement them in the first place? That's the million-dollar question. And so, then I think also, can you honor yourself enough to honor them? Because sometimes even if we, you know, there's like, no, I don't. And then it's like, well, can you? Is that even a possibility? Yeah.
Yeah. So boundaries are tricky. It's taken me a long time to like even have any kind of understanding of them. And it's going to be a long road ahead. But
right there with you. Well, and in my personal experience, I find that also every single time I grow, every single time I go through a period of up-leveling or adjusting in my life, my boundaries come back into recalibration and they come back into question. And so things where I felt like, oh, I've got this settled, I've got this figured out, I've got this, you know, I've got this boundary worked out already. And then like I would go through a period, like I'd go through a growth spurt and suddenly I would have to be setting boundaries with my time again. I would have to be setting boundaries with requests and things that people were asking of me. And I would have to kind of circle back around to, okay, these are my boundaries. Like I have to set this again.
Yeah.
And so now when I have these periods of like, oh God, do I have to set boundaries again? I see it as like, this is usually a sign of a growth spurt, but, you know, I remember the first time that I had a boundary lesson and it was just up in my face and it was not easy, you know? And I don't know, anybody who thinks setting boundaries is easy, I'm like, I don't know, like either like, show me your secret or like, are you really setting boundaries?
Well, also like you're allowed to change your mind about them too. And they're fluid and ever changing. And so I think it's like that idea of restriction that we get kind of caught in that sometimes.
Well, and this weaves back into the whole idea of recognizing when something is no longer in alignment for you and giving yourself permission to cut free from it and to pivot, to change, as opposed to sticking with it. And this idea of rigidity of boundaries, like once you've set this rule or you've set this idea, that's the way it's going to be forever, is sort of very similar to this idea of you're married, you're going to stay married forever. You're in this job, you're going to stay in this job forever. You know, there's no room for pivoting.
Yeah. It sounds like a reflection of the current state of our world, actually.
Yeah.
In the big picture.
Absolutely. Well, and it's like, you know, I don't know, like to me, the only way out is through, but also is really about the willingness to be willing to admit what is working and what is not working and not continuing to, there's that term in business, sunk cost. And the idea of when you've invested so much in something that you hold on to it just because you already invested so much. But sometimes it's like, it's okay to just say, you know, it was a good run, but I'm done with it now.
Right. It's not I think the word failure, people are afraid of that one too. But you haven't really failed until you stop trying.
Yes. Well, and I personally really like the idea of looking at things instead of thinking of it as failure. I started thinking of it as feedback. And really, like every single time something doesn't work as I expect it to, it's more of feedback in an experiment where it's information that I need to course correct, that I need to adjust, that I still have something to learn about this, that, you know, I didn't, you know, that sort of like, if it, you know, it's not over till the fat lady sings, that there's always, you know, in like, until it's done, it's not done.
Yeah.
So now is the point where I say to you, oh my goodness, I cannot believe how fast time has gone by. So this has been, I mean, we've been on an amazing journey about, I think, it seems to me like honoring our authentic self has really kind of been the core of this conversation today.
Right.
And
yeah.
just, you know, and respecting the truth of who we are as opposed to who we think we should be. What else? What feels like I really want to be sure that I speak to this before, you know, so that, you know, like you're not going to kick yourself later and you're like, oh my God, I should have said this.
Just to like bring it full circle and kind of like talk about what I'm doing with my PhD work and research is so like I've had experiences as an actor where like that you go into all of this training and preparation to get into character. But there's not any kind of effort or explanation or support in how to get out of it. And so like boundaries, like surrounding that too, is something that is really, 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 really important from my own experience, from the perspective of like people who are in intimate scenes on stage together, because like those relationships can trickle into real life and have like real life effects. We've seen it like with celebrities, but it happens like on amateur, like community theater levels too. And it has a real, real impact. And the second one is that I did a play and my character tried to commit suicide. And so I went home after rehearsal one night and I found myself in a place of like dark despair and I didn't really know what to do. And luckily I was able to talk to the producer of the show and she kind of talked me down, but that was a point where I was able to kind of take myself out of it and look at the situation with awareness of if I'm experiencing this, then this is something that other people probably experience too. So this is something really important as far as like creating boundaries around those specific things for performers.
Oh, you just dropped. Like I'm like mic drop here. You just, what you're saying is so incredibly interesting and so true. I think about a couple things. One I think about is you were talking about like the idea of intimacy and, you know, not just for celebrities, but for anybody in theater. I've also seen it in role-playing games, like cosplay, people who are involved in sort of alternate fantasy reality worlds, where I've known of people who like started, like they have their like real, they have their real life partner. And then they've got their LARPing partner or their like Dungeons and Dragons partner or some other form, or like if you've got like, even I've heard of it like within like, you know, SCA, Society for Creative Anachronism, where you've got these people of these elaborate alternative lives. And suddenly it's like you get these people who are connected and partnered, and the bleed through between quote fantasy and reality, how that can happen. So I think what you're talking about is such an important topic and so interesting. But then also the idea of that residue that we carry forward when you are channeling an actor or an, you know, like you're channeling a character as an actor, and how significant that is. And, you know, as a culture, we spend so much time focusing on getting into things, but we really don't spend much time at all talking about how do we get out of things. And which kind of goes back to the idea of, because we're not ever supposed to get out of things, we're supposed to find the one thing and stay with it until we die. But what you're saying is feels so incredibly important, because, and you know, I mean, and sometimes I really, like, I actually heard one theory way back about Heath Ledger was that he was method acting the Joker role, and that he did not quite like it, just kind of like it really messed with him playing that role, and that it kind of led to his like some, this was just a theory, but that kind of was something that led to his demise, basically, that he just couldn't break out of that character. And this just feels like, I mean, we could do an entire episode just on this.
Yeah. And
so important.
And there's also like a real, there's a term called post-show blues. And there is like a real like depression period after a show is wrapped, or because you have like these exchanges with people on a regular basis that's suddenly yanked away from you. So And that has a real life effect too.
It really does. Mm-hmm. Well, you're in these incredibly intimate communities, and your entire life is living, breathing, and thinking this experience. And then all of a sudden, it's like one day you're on and the next day it's over. I've absolutely had the experience with a number of creative projects, but especially when you're part of a group creative project, there is nothing quite like it being over. And then it's kind of like, you know, like, yeah. Where did it all go?
Yeah. It happens with musicians and dancers. It happens like all across the board. And it happens frequently in the workplace too. I know there's workplace romance, but when you're in a creative situation, especially like when you're required to be intimate, like as part of your job, I think it's a little different.
Yeah, absolutely. So at this point in time, I love to do this exercise, this time traveling exercise. And I always explain that I believe that podcasts exist outside of time. We record them, you know, in the moment, but then they exist on a server and people listen to them for years and years and years. I also believe that there's a way that it's sort of like the podcast is a broadcast that's like a stone that gets dropped in the river of time, and it ripples both ways. And so what I like to think of is that we're here with this intention to create this, you know, this podcast that extends across time. And what we can do is we can kind of fold that ribbon of time or that river of time back on top of itself. And we can bring a broadcast or really like go back to a time where a younger version of you, or perhaps a future version of you, but usually it's a younger version of you, really needs a message, really needs that leg up and that support. So I always like to ask the question, you know, who are we going back to? How old are they? When, where are we going back to? And then what are you saying to them? And not, I would tell her, but like speak directly to her, talk to her, tell her what she needs to hear. So where are we going? And then let it rip.
Oh, where are we going? I think 8. Can we go back to 8?
Absolutely.
Okay. So I'm telling her something. We're having a conversation. That's right.
Yes. Yeah. You're speaking to her. You're giving her the message she needs to hear.
Okay. You're on the right path.
You're on the right path.
Yeah. Don't worry so much about what other people think.
Don't worry so much about what other people will think.
Your voice is your own.
Your voice is your own. Yeah. I'm hearing to say to her, keep singing.
Yeah.
It's yours first. Keep singing. Okay, final question. How do we get in touch with you?
Well, I don't think you want to call me on the phone. So,
no, I mean, I'd spare you that. You know, I'm not sure giving phone numbers out on a podcast is the smartest idea. Yes. Plus, this was an infomercial and we were trying to sell some kind of swag.
Yes. Sure. Okay. So, I have a website, it's whitneyannjenkins.com. I have a podcast. It's called Unconditioning. I have a second podcast with a friend of mine called Entertaining the Light, and we talk about mental health and the entertainment industry specifically.
Ooh.
And let's see, what else? The Wild Inner Child is wildinnerchild.com. And yeah, I'm an integrative wellness coach. And so if you feel compelled to want to work with me in that way, especially if you're an artist or creative, because I can come from that perspective, then I offer that as well as Reiki. And I think that's all the places. Instagram, Facebook, wherever you feel most drawn to.
Excellent. And all of this will be in the show notes. If you are just listening to this, wandering about, driving your car, whatever, come on over to empathicmasteryshow.com to find the show notes and to find those links in there. One last question, because you were saying you've recorded a lot of audiobooks. Is there a particular audiobook that is like an all-time favorite of yours that you recorded that, you know, like if somebody wanted to listen to a book and you're just like, I loved this book, I loved recording it, what was it?
So there is a book series called The Lightning Brain. And I've been working on that book series for probably like 4 years. And it is about a girl who gets struck by lightning at birth. And she has all of these incredible powers. And it also like intersects a lot of like philosophy and psychology and like quantum physics within it. It's really dense, but it was really fun, and it kind of connects all of the things about myself. So I've gotten to kind of like grow with this character along the way, and that's been really fun.
Oh, that sounds amazing. So it's fiction.
It is fiction. Yeah.
Wow. And it's called The Lightning Brain.
Yes.
Wow. I think I'm a big fan of audiobooks, so I definitely think I will have to check it out because I love to listen to your voice. You have such a beautiful voice.
Thank you.
Winnie-Ann, thank you so much for being here and for having this honest, authentic, real conversation and just going on this journey with me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for letting me sit in the hot seat this time. Yeah.
As we come to the end of this episode, I'd love to hear what you're taking from this show. Please jump over to empathicmasteryshow.com to leave your comments. In the show notes, you'll find a link to grab your copy of My Empathic Safety Guide, 3 Basics for Finding Calm in the Eye of the Storm. And while you're there, please subscribe and follow this show. And thank you for your help sharing this show with the people who need it. Please help me to spread the word and send this podcast to friends or family members who need support living as highly sensitive empathic people. Then join me again when the next Empathic Mastery Show airs. Okay, one last time. Hop over to empathicmasteryshow.com for your empathic safety guide. And until next show, shine on. We need you and your gifts here on this planet. So please don't judge your empathic rainbow by colorblind standards.